Hello and welcome back to the Foxy Property Chat podcast. This is episode 3 of the more business related side of things, and I have Jake with me
here today. How are you today, Jake, on this fine Monday morning?
It is a fine Monday morning, isn't it? I'm doing very well, Cody. How are you?
Yeah, getting into the week, had a few coffees, so yeah, it's starting to fire up now. Very good. Jake, it's been a little while since we've done podcasts, probably nearly a couple of months, maybe about 6 weeks or so. The last one, since then, in the last 6 weeks, what's been happening, at least what you can share?
So there's quite a bit happening, actually. So we've had a very busy couple of months, and the next couple are already, you know, we're into winter, or about to be into winter, sorry, and it's still looking like the next few months are going to be flat out for us, and spring, we're already looking forward to that, and what that might look like in terms of needing new furniture and a few other things that we might need to look at in the business. Mm-hmm. So I guess we've a couple of things that are a little different over the last couple of months. In particular, is we've started using a fourth truck, an external company. We didn't need one full time, but we needed one on a handful of days. So that kind of indicates the level of work is increasing compared to what we usually see this time of year.
And at what point do you go, well, when do we bring in a fourth truck?
And we're having that conversation at the moment, so we're close to that point. And on top of that, we've got new people coming into the team. We've had a number of new stylists start. We're looking at another marketing person. We've got a few new people in the logistics team. So we're growing the team ready for that increase in capacity, increase in the number of trucks that we have. And then we are also talking, we're having conversations about kind of warehouse and location and whether it's big enough for the next phase of growth. We've got a few options that we're kind of looking at and talking about at the moment.
Mm. Yeah.
Watch this space.
You definitely underplayed it in terms of what you can and can't share, but yeah, exciting things in the works, potentially.
Yeah.
Talking. Okay, so in this podcast, if you didn't watch episode or listen to episode 1 and 2, we go through some quotes and different things I've found on LinkedIn, and I put it to you for comment, Jake.
Okay, so I have not looked at these.
You have not. The first one, I just want you to comment on each one as I go. There's 9 points here. A toxic culture can sink the mightiest of corporations. Here he says 8 signs of a strong company culture, although I believe he's thrown in 9. Cool. So first one, people make friends at work.
I guess that comes down to enjoying who you're spending your time with and having not necessarily shared interests outside of work, but just having that mutual respect and enjoyment of what you're doing at work and what your role entails and the people you do it with. So yeah, that makes sense. And we've seen that.
Number 2, people have a higher level of trust.
I guess that one is to me an indication that you've got a good team culture. So you do everything to get the team culture right and get the right people in place. And the outcome or the output of that is trust between with the leaders, the managers, and your peers.
So, yep. People celebrate each other's wins.
Yep. I guess that kind of comes down to less of an individual thing and more of a, as a business, do we celebrate and go out of our way to celebrate when other people do good work or achieve certain things or go out of their way to help each other. We try and do that here.
People feel a sense of team effort.
Same as the last one, really. Mm. Yep. Yeah. More of the same.
People have authority in their roles.
And that's one that we probably haven't done as well as maybe in some respects, as well as we could or as fast as we could to transition. So in the beginning of a business like this, when you're doing everything, bringing somebody else on to take on some of what you used to do is not an easy thing to do, letting go, especially when you start talking about more of the leadership sort of tasks that you look after. But giving people that autonomy to make decisions and do that themselves just gives them more opportunity, accomplishment in their roles, and it leads to more, I guess, employee satisfaction.
People have room to try new things.
I agree with that. Just that comes down to people enjoying what they do and feeling like they're constantly challenged and have new opportunities.
Goes back to that authority in their roles a little bit as well.
Yep.
People feel great on a Sunday evening, so they're not dreading those Monday mornings.
Yep. Nothing to add to that. Yep.
People feel comfortable asking for help.
Yeah, same thing. It's about a sense of team and having the people around you to support you.
And removing fear. People can express their honest opinions.
But exactly what you just said, removing fear. You kind of preempted that one. Cool. So same thing. Yeah, I got all of that.
Well, that's the first one.
Easy.
The others I don't think will be as wordy. So the next one, we're moving on, here's a quote for you. I suppose I should have played it safe. And then the comment is that it is said no artist on their deathbed. Any thoughts around that?
I go to something that Gary Vee talks about a lot is regret. So people don't generally regret the things that they've done or tried or that didn't work. It's the things that they didn't try or didn't attempt that they tend to look back and go, I wish I did this or I wish I did that. Mm. So I think that kind of comes back to don't, if there's something that you want to do, if there's something that you're tossing up the idea of, I think it's a safer bet from, you know, from a personal point of view and how you look back on those sort of decisions to give it a go, because you'd rather at least know. What is it? Even a different way of thinking about that is dying on your own sword, like make the decision that suits you, that you want to have a go at something, which is the opposite of playing it safe, I guess, which is what the quote's about. Playing it safe would be, I'm not going to try that, I'm not going to go out and take that risk. But nobody who ever accomplished anything or nobody who looks back at their life regrets not doing something, I think.
It's funny to weigh this up because sometimes I hear people talk about things they might be looking to try and do, some start a new business or maybe expand their business. And I hear them talk about it and I go to in my inner mind, I'm thinking, no, don't do that. Like, definitely, that's a terrible idea. And I wouldn't ever come out straight and say that to someone. But even in that situation, maybe it's still best for their inner mind in terms of long-term health and regret. Maybe it is better for them to do it and fail and then learn.
And learn from it. And at least, I mean, you can tell somebody, you can give advice, don't do it this way, try this way first. Mm. But, you know, if they don't fully believe the advice they're getting, then there's going to be that lack of or some regret at the end for not doing it what they thought was going to work. I don't know. I would say, yes, there's always a way it up. It's not like do everything. Mm. Not don't say yes to everything necessarily. But if there's something that you're maybe scared of or if it frightens you a little bit, then there's probably a reason that you should look into something, okay. Lean into it.
All right, moving on. And I want to know how this applies to you and Phoebe slash Foxy. To be considered the best in your industry, you don't need to be the best at one thing. You need to be good at a variety of complementary and rare skills, your industry values, and that your competitors lack. So the image is called skill stacking. So there's an image here of some books and each book is titled something differently, like writing, psychology, personal finance. That's just an example. But how do you think about skill stacking and being good at multiple things?
The image here, the ones that you just mentioned, seem more of a personal thing. Sure. And I think it can apply individually, but also as an organisation. So my first thought was around the business, Foxy as a business and how that applies to us. And I think that kind of describes how we built our service and our reputation and some of the relationships that we built early on. So it wasn't that we were the best stylist or we had the best result. It wasn't that we had the best pricing or those things. It was a combination of a number of things that were very simple, or we thought were very simple from a serviceability point of view or being helpful. So things like we always returned phone calls, we got the quotes out quickly, we showed up when we said we were going to, which all sounds very simple, but at the same time there was a number of companies, and we know this from feedback from clients and agents, who just weren't doing those things.
The simple things.
Even little things like we quite early on decided that we're going to do things like better payment terms than anyone was offering, or we did a lot of partial staging that nobody else seemed to want to do. So it was a combination of these very simple decisions where we looked at the industry and looked at the feedback that we were getting and said, these things aren't being done well or aren't being done at all or are maybe overlooked by other companies. Yep. So we just did all these simple things, and the combination of those things made us a very attractive option as a stager, even though we might not have been the best price or maybe we didn't have the experience that some others did in the industry.
Sure. But what I guess enabled you to offer those things is your specific skill sets as well. So you and Phoebe are quite different. You have different skill sets. You're more the numbers guy, logistics, efficiency. Phoebe, perhaps more the customer service, the styling. And when you combine those, you're able to offer those things.
Yeah, and I think that goes across the board for anybody in their role. You know, if you have one thing that you're very good at, that's what you'll end up doing, spending all your time doing. And in some cases, in some, I guess, jobs, that might make sense that you need a very specific person or a very specific skill set. But for a business like ours, having people that can do multiple things is always going to be more attractive to us than somebody who can do one thing very well.
Specialised.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Moving on to the next one. I'll read the quote first and then a little bit of info to go with it. The moment your gut says no, it's a no. You can unpack the details later. And then some text to go with it. Your gut often knows someone before you do. Your gut can spot ego, character flaws, and negative intentions because your gut instinct doesn't overlook past lessons like your mind does. You have to trust your gut when it comes to choosing the people you surround yourself with. What are your thoughts around that?
I'm going to sit on the fence on this one a little bit. I can understand this. This comes down to intuition and whether you are an intuitive person and feel like you can trust that. And I think it comes down to your experience and I guess, has your gut led you the right way in the past? And can you, you know, look back at what decisions you've made? And I mean, it's also one of those, you know, in hindsight sort of things. Like, it's easy to look back and go, oh, I knew I had a feeling about that and I shouldn't have done it.
True.
But in the moment, I think it's more of an indecision. I wouldn't say it's, I mean, personally as well, you know, I probably would say I'm a little bit of an overthinker sometimes. So, you know, I'll think about everything from a number of angles and then try and decide, you know, what the decision's going to be based on that. And sometimes it, you know, if it's a 50-50 sort of decision, it's not as simple as going, well, my gut says no, because I'm looking at all these things and go, well, part of me says no, but part of me says yes.
Sure.
So I think intuition is, and gut is a very important thing to consider and to factor into decisions. And I wouldn't dismiss it by any means, but I don't think it's as simple as that either.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm going to sit on the fence a bit on that one.
Yeah, I like your take. Next one, quote here, no one knows what they're doing, not even the ones with degrees, big job titles, or the people on your vision board. Everyone is just trying loudly, failing loudly, and trying again, and so should you. You shouldn't fear failure for this reason.
Yeah, I think that's one of those things. Everybody looks at certain people and thinks they've got it together, and we do this as well, but I can tell you that every time... Well, not every time, but I mean, there's been plenty of occasions where you look at somebody from the outside and you look at what they're doing and you don't know the whole story. You think, you know, that they're killing it, they're someone to emulate, and in many ways they are. But then when you meet people, you realise they're going through the same stuff you are. Everybody's got personal stuff. Everybody's got business stuff. And like I says, even the people with degrees, I mean, you know, I have a degree and I went into a job as a graduate and had no idea what was going on, you know. So you can learn things. You can learn different skill sets and technical, you know, bits depending on what you've learned. But yeah, I think it's just about recognizing some people have more experience, but everybody's figuring out as they go to some degree.
And everyone knows Instagram is more of a highlight reel of people's lives,
isn't
it? You're really only seeing the good stuff, the best stuff.
And from the outside, you can't possibly know what's going on.
Yep. I'm interested in your thoughts on this one. This is from Gary Vee. Meetings that mean little or are 2 to 3 times too long are the silent killer of professionals. Do me one favour today. Look at your calendar for tomorrow and cut one 1-hour meeting to 30 minutes and one 30-minute meeting to 15 minutes. Now, we don't have a lot of meetings, but how do you see this one? Was that intentional? Is this resonate with you, or is it just like the nature of our business?
I think it's a bit of both. I think... This speaks to me from my previous corporate life.
Yeah.
I remember being in meetings that were weekly 2-hour meetings, and my component of it was 5 minutes at most, and I was there more, and everybody was similar. There was a lot of people in the room, and it was more that you were supposed to be there so you had an understanding of what was going on across the entire project from everybody. But honestly, you walk out of that going, man, that was 2 hours of my morning. I'm not going to get back. So I think that that's true in a lot of businesses. I think in a small business, it's very different. And for us, like you said, we don't have a lot of meetings probably. In fact, I would actually argue we should do more. More from a team morale point of view, getting people together, making sure that we're, from a leadership point of view, sharing enough of the information about the direction of the business and some of the things that are going on. That's probably something that Phoebe and I can get better at doing. And I wouldn't say that the meetings we have, I mean, the meetings that we do have are generally 30 minutes, maybe an hour, and you could cut them down, but given they don't happen that often, I'd say that's maybe not as relevant to us. But at the same time, you should always be thinking about those, even though, actually, I'll give you a different take on it. Some of the one-on-one meetings that Phoebe and I have maybe are things that go for longer than they need to, because they generally become more of a, you know, we're chatting about stuff that's going on, as opposed to this is a meeting for a specific reason. Now, both of those are important. It's, you know, when we're a small business, we want to spend time with everybody. We want to make sure that people feel like we're accessible. But there's maybe sometimes where some of those things should be more specific or deliberate about why that we're having a meeting. So I think it's probably more of a why we're doing meetings as opposed to cut it just because you're supposed to cut it.
Yeah, sure. But I agree. I think small businesses are probably a lot better at this.
Yep.
In a corporate environment, yes, they're prone to more longer meetings.
Well, all the project teams and committees and the things that get set up in those sort of bigger businesses, when you've got a lot of people, often they all feel like they need to have their own little meetings, and it's overkill.
Yeah, sure. Two to go, both from Gary Vee.
Okay.
All right, so a quote here. Remember, A+ human beings with B minus skills. Always beat A plus talent with a C plus personality.
So basically, he's saying hire for the person and who they are and their personality and
over the skills.
Traits over the skills. And that's 100% what Phoebe and I believe. And that's what we've tried to do at Foxy.
Yeah, so important. Yep. Team culture, all that
stuff. We can train for the skills, but I can't change who you are as a person.
Yeah. I'll start with a quote here, then some added words from Gary Vee. So the quote, the bigger the ambition, the slower you need to go. And some wording here. Time is something that people really struggle with. People need patience and need to know they have time to change their minds, their careers, their paths. You have time to change your mind. Speed day to day is super important, but being patient is the most important from year to year.
So having listened to Gary Vee for years now, he says this same message in a number of ways. And I've heard other people say versions of this. So for instance, people tend to overestimate what they can do in the short term, but underestimate what they can do in the long term, which means your 1 month, 2 month goals tend to be very difficult. You're over ambitious. Whereas your 10 year goals, you can't even imagine what you can do in 10 years yet. And I think here, this speaks to Gary Vee's message of patience. So he calls it, micro speed, macro patience, which is longer term strategic sort of visions, should be patient. You should have big ambitions, but you need to have patience with those because they're just going to take a lot of time. They're going to take a lot of consistency in the day-to-day stuff that you do. But on a day-to-day basis, you need to be fast. You need to move quick. You need to make decisions. You need to take action. So, I think looking back at, Foxy's been in business for 7 years now. If you'd said where we'd be 7 years ago, we'd probably be, we'd probably hope we could be somewhere where we are now, but at the same time, that's a big jump from our business starting with zero to where we are now.
Sure.
And yet, if you said 1 year in, how far would we like to be? Maybe I would have looked at that and said I would have liked to be further as well. So, I think it's have those big ambitions, but recognise that it takes time.
Cool. Well, that's it. That's the podcast. Thanks, Jake.
Thank you, Cody. Appreciate it.
See you in the next one.